Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, February 12th, welcome, 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 friends, on into the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Cherry.
Yes, Avi.
All you need is love.
Yeah, I believe that.
Love is all you need.
Love is all you need.
But if the love goes away, you might need some money, too.
Mm. Cash, cash, dollar bill.
Today, we're going to be doing our Valentine's Day themed show on a topic that's adjacent, but you might say contrary to the theme of the holiday. We're talking about money and relationships and looking specifically at the rise in prenups. There was a New Yorker article all about this. We'll have the author on later. We'll also talk to a certified couples therapist all about how money winds its way through relationships in good ways and bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an open call this hour. We would love, love, love folks to write in and call in. We want to know, how have you navigated money in your romantic relationships? And we'd love your story of what's worked and maybe what hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
I look forward to hearing from our listeners, because folks always add a little wrinkle, a little interesting facts or views that you wouldn't have thought about. So 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And because it's Thursday, and this is a ripe topic, by the way.
Very ripe.
It is DJ of the day, which means you get to choose a song that you think is linked to the subject. It could be love. It could be marriage. It could be heartbreak. I don't know. Whatever you want to throw. Money. Oh, of course. Money, money, money. And you can email studio2@whyy.org by 12:30. And EP Kevin will make a decision and we'll play the song at the end and give you a shout out.
We will indeed. studio2@whyy.org. Get your submissions in for DJ of the day. Probably don't do All You Need Is Love.
Yeah. Yes. Be a little creative.
Yeah. Be a little creative. studio2@whyy.org. But first, before all of that, before the love talk and the money talk, a trio of local news stories. And Cherry Gregg, I'd love if you would start us off.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
Weird energy so far.
Mayor Sherrill Parker is hoping to diversify Philadelphia's economic focus on EDS and NADS by adding shipbuilding to the city's roster of industries. Parker pitched the idea that Philadelphia's future will be anchored by maritime, shipbuilding, and defense to thousands of business leaders at the mayor's annual Chamber of Commerce luncheon on Wednesday.
Was anchored a pun there?
It was a pun.
Well done, by the way.
Thank
you. Just want to give you credit.
You know,
for that.
And I got to give credit to the Philadelphia Business Journal, because I did take that. You know, I'm not punny.
Yeah, yeah. It's
you
okay.
Know, I'm not punny.
Okay, shout out to the Business Journal.
Shout out
Go
to
ahead.
The Business. Yeah. It appears that the idea has a lot of momentum, with major investments into the Navy Yard and Philadelphia's docks over the past few years. The mayor highlighted the $5 billion investment into the Hanwha Philly Shipyard, into shipbuilding in South Philly, $100 million effort to expand the Navy Yard, and a 15-year plan to bring 9,000 jobs to the Port of Philadelphia. By the way, that South Korean Hanwha Group's multi-billion-dollar investment could bring an additional 5,000 jobs. They've already added about 500 additional jobs there, going from 1,500 jobs to 2,000 jobs in just the past couple of years. And so all of this, of course, is in alignment with some of the efforts by the Trump administration to bring more shipbuilding prominence to the United States as well. So
yeah, it's like a turn back the clock strategy in some ways, trying to say that Philadelphia, while it does very well in the EDS and MEDS space, should look more at defense contracting and shipbuilding and some of these industries that have a storied past in Philadelphia and then struggled for a bit in the post-industrial, you know, reality, and maybe are coming back around. Look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be an expert on this. I will say that, you know, EDS and MEDS are still huge job drivers, right? I was just looking, for instance, at the latest jobs report from the government, and jobs in healthcare are driving like all job growth right now, like 100% of it.
Yeah.
Other industries are struggling. So maybe this is a play for 5 or 10 years down the road. I don't know.
But you got to start, somewhere.
Yeah, but right now, I would say the healthcare jobs are still kind of where it's at. And maybe that's just this moment. I don't know. But, you know, it's interesting to hear the mayor talk about trying to diversify an economy that has become in some ways pretty reliant on healthcare jobs and education sector jobs.
Yeah. And I want to point out, we've been talking about a lot of the growth on the ports. I mean, Philly's about to be a cruise port in just a couple of months, you know, with Norwegian launching, you know, it's, you know, a lot of ships going to be leaving from here every year. So that's huge too. That'll bring some jobs. So interesting.
Yep. Some jobs unfortunately are at risk in Westchester for this next story here. Mm-hmm. So, Westchester-based QVC looks to be in major financial trouble. The home shopping network saw its stock plummet this week after Bloomberg reported the company may file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. QVC's stock price is down to just over $3 last time I checked this morning. A year ago, it was over $21. In 2021, it peaked near $700 a share. So just a stunning plummet over the last 5 years or so. QVC struggles are not news, and they're not new. There was a round of layoffs last year, and in general, you can probably imagine customer habits are changing. A home shopping network on television may not appeal as much to folks if they're shopping online or getting recommendations through social media. Tariffs also might be a factor in QVC's struggles. And I should note that bankruptcy in this case, if it happens for QVC, does not mean they will necessarily go out of business, but it could presage some sort of downsizing.
Yeah, I mean, bankruptcy allows companies to restructure if they do. And QVC, according to the reporting, has $6 billion in debt. And that was as of September. So it would probably give them some breathing room to kind of deal with that. But you mentioned, and I mean, QVC, while a pioneer in home shopping, a lot has changed. You got Amazon. You got people on the TikTok store. You know, you're inundated with shopping ads on Instagram. And so it's really easy now to shop on your right from your phone. And, you know, I did a Google search and a lot of people complain about the QVC app. They say it's dysfunctional. So they got some work to do there. Also, you know, they got to work on maybe they can do some live streaming on TikTok. They've announced that they wanted to be the TikTok
like
live streamer.
Yeah.
So we'll see. This could be an opportunity, but it's definitely a crossroads. For
I mean, it used to be you'd go to a specific channel, QVC, and shop that way. Now you turn on your smart TV and it almost does the home shopping for you. It'll say while you're watching a commercial, do you want to click on?
And you can click the button, boom, you're right over there.
And so the QVC idea is integrated into the entire television experience now, for better or worse. And so it's harder, I think, as a standalone channel to stand out and to make money. And so QVC struggles, like we say, probably not all that surprising. I'm interested to see if there's a future for a brand like this.
Because I was thinking, when was the last time I shopped, you know, on QVC or Home Shopping Network? And it's literally like the first few weeks of the pandemic. And since then, it's been like online shopping and other things. So that's probably when they had their peak during 2021. And now people kind of
exactly early pandemic.
Yeah.
All right. Story number three.
Yes. A Philadelphia born dancer is set to become the first male identifying person to play the role of an evil fairy in the New York Ballet's production of Sleeping Beauty. Nice write-up by the New York Times about Taylor Stanley, who will play the very glamorous Carabosse, which is typically played by a woman in the ballet. And by the way, if you don't know who Carabosse is, she is the wicked antagonist in Sleeping Beauty who curses Princess Aurora to die via a spindle prick after being excluded from her christening. So she was kind of ousted from the christening, got mad, and cursed her. And so very evil fairy. Yes. And the most notable adaptation was portrayed by Angelina Jolie and Maleficent.
It's like an iconic role.
Iconic role. And so Stanley, who is biracial, queer and non-binary, advocated for the role multiple times and was repeatedly told no. But he truly believed that he possesses the ability to play the part and went directly to the to Peter Martin, the New York Ballet's former director, who actually choreographed the ballet, and he gave him a shot. So there you go.
Persistence pays off.
And Stanley, who trained at the Rock School in South Philly, by the way, will take the stage and bring all the dramatic flair. He says he's ready.
Yeah. And we are ready to celebrate you, you know, Taylor Stanley, Philadelphian. I read Taylor Stanley got their start, or the reason they got into ballet. Parents took them to a performance at 3 years old at the Philadelphia Ballet.
Look at that.
And little three-year-old Taylor Stanley was so into it, they signed him up for classes, and then from there become a big star. I actually had never heard of Taylor Stanley, but apparently has been a big dancer in the New York Ballet for many, many years now, you know, over 5 years. And I know this is not the point of the story, but when a Philadelphia person goes to New York and shows out,
you gotta shout
you
that
know,
out.
Yeah. I get a little flutter in my heart from that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's Philly over New York all day.
It for real. I'm very pro Philly. And by the way, I just love how the portrayal of characters on stage has become more diverse, crossing racial gender lines. So shout out to Taylor Stanley, and I hope you do great this weekend, because first performance February 14th.
And we hope you will stick around for the rest of our show talking about money and love. Have Aww. You navigated money in your romantic relationships? Got some good stories to share? Give us a call, 888-477-9499.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, Valentine's Day is this weekend. And in the spirit of getting spicy, we've decided to talk about one of the top reasons cited for divorce. Money. I know y'all not surprised. It's really hard to talk about. And for a lot of people, the idea of permanently merging finances can be really stressful. And some people are managing that stress by getting proactive.
One of our guests today spent 4 months researching a story for The New Yorker magazine called Why Millennials Love Prenups, all about why more and more young people are preparing for divorce before saying I do. She's also a native of West Philadelphia. We got to shout that out. Jennifer Wilson. Welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be home, even virtually. I agree with what you said earlier, Philly over New York, every day.
That's good right. Start. It's a solid start,
yeah,
Jennifer.
Yeah. And hi, Mom. She's listening.
Oh, hey, Mom.
All right. I love it. We also have Laura Silverstein, a couples counselor with 30 years of experience helping people of all ages navigating these tricky conversations. She's author of Love is an Action Verb and co-owner of Mainline Counseling Partners, a private practice in Bryn Mawr. Laura, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a delight to be here. Great
it's a
topic.
Delight. Yeah, well, yeah. We're excited to talk about this. We're also excited to hear from our listeners today. How have you navigated money in your romantic relationships? What's worked? And what hasn't? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2 at whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And so, Jennifer, we wanted to start with you because this article gave us the idea for the show. So prenups have surged in popularity among younger couples. I was really surprised by that. But you've spent months sort of covering this issue, researching this issue. What was the most surprising thing that stood out to you about the why and what struck you about it?
I mean, you're right. So many young couples are getting, I hope millennials are still considered young.
On this show, they are. Okay.
They're also popular with Gen Z, who are now starting to get married as well. So what was most surprising to me was that a lot of the people who are getting prenups now, I mean, we associate prenups with the very wealthy.
Yes.
We're thinking about people with major assets, or maybe one partner has a lot of money and one doesn't. But now you're seeing prenups, you're seeing people interested in prenups who don't actually have very much. In some cases, they hope to one day have money. And sometimes the prenups can be a bit aspirational. You know, I interviewed a couple, they're aspiring screenwriters. They don't have a ton of money right now, but they said to me, well, what if one of us sells a script? You know, who's going to get the IP in the divorce? Student loan debt is also a major concern. So it's not just assets that people are worried about, it's debt and, you know, what happens to all of that debt in the event of a divorce. But also the thing that was most surprising to me was that it wasn't just that more young people were getting prenups, but that they were like changing what a prenup is. There's one company, I interviewed the founder, it's called Hello Prenup, and they have all of these clauses. So we're all used to maybe like the infidelity clause, that sort of thing. But they have things like, you know, a social media image clause, which basically you can assign a financial penalty to any negative post that your ex puts up about you. There's things like embryo clauses. So a lot of millennials are getting married later. So that's a concern, like who gets, you know, the embryos in the event of a divorce? Do you split them? What if there's an odd number? Who pays for the storage fees? So many things that blew my mind. And even the infidelity clause, that's changing now as technology changes. I interviewed a lawyer who told me that, you know, a relationship with like an AI chatbot, you know, the kinds that you see that have come out with companies through companies like Replica, that could be considered an emotional affair. And she told me, yeah, you can subpoena those conversations with a chatbot. So I really stumbled into this brave new world.
Mm. And why do you think culturally people are more drawn to the idea of signing a prenup? Because look, there's always been thorny issues, whatever the technology that existed, mm-hmm. there's always going to be issues that happen when there's the dissolution of a relationship or a marriage. But I guess what's changing is that people are thinking about that before they even get married at sort of a larger scale. Why might that be?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think whenever you're talking about generations, you know, generational trends, you're talking about history. And what we know is that, you know, millennials, I mean, it technically started with Gen X, but really millennials are the first heirs of no-fault divorce. So 25% of millennials grew up in homes where their parents were either divorced or separated. Mm. So they're just a bit more realistic about, you know, happily ever after. You know, it doesn't always work out that way. And a lot of them saw their parents go through very ugly divorces, or they saw their parents, one parent lose a lot in a divorce. I interviewed one man who got a prenup, and he told me that his parents had gotten divorced 11 times between the two of them.
Wow.
And the thing he just remembered the most from his childhood was just constantly feeling like almost, you know, like they constantly were moving. They would get a house and they would have to give it up. And so he really wanted in his prenup that the house that he owned before marriage would remain his. And it usually does anyway legally, but it can get kind of complicated. So he just wanted it very clear that that house was his house. He just has a lot of trauma around those constant moves.
Yeah. And Laura, I want to bring you into the conversation because, and I mean, I know you talk to a lot of couples. Is this about money? Is this about trust? Or is this really just maturity, having seen all the things that Jennifer just talked about?
Right, right. I mean, it's so interesting, these trends changing. And I think a lot of it is about independence and security and comfort, right? If you're committing your life to somebody, there's a sense of, what am I giving up? Am I giving up my independence? And there's a fear of loss of autonomy, what you're bringing in. But then on the other side, I think there's a concern about, you know, if somebody's asking you to sign a prenup, you know, are they really committed till death do part? Yeah. And that there can be some hurt feelings around that.
I always felt like that was the stigma against it, right? Like, why are we talking about
the end
when we're at the beginning?
Right.
And we can get into postnups later. That's a different concept. But I guess, what do you think it says, Laura, about the way people approach relationships now, that maybe there's a little less of that stigma, or that they're comfortable at least pushing past that stigma?
I think the young people are teaching us the importance of having conversations earlier and being preventative. I think that we always have so much to learn from them in terms of how they are willing to have these hard conversations that maybe in previous generations were much more taboo to talk about money. So I think it's great that they're willing to talk about them. And I think that there is also a trend where people are much more realistic about knowing the statistics about divorce. And so they want to protect themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those statistics show that the technology of marriage, it's not perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got 40% sometimes of marriages not working. And so, Jennifer, I mean, people look at prenups in a lot of different ways. Some say they are very helpful. They protect women. And some say they're designed to protect men, you know, because of the gold digger stigma, right? And so what were some of the reasons that you heard people? I mean, we went over a few, but who are they designed to protect, or is it just designed to protect everyone?
I mean, it's really hard to speak generally about prenups because each one is tailor-made for that specific couple. So every prenup is completely unique. But I mean, you're right that more women are seeking out prenups than before. A lot of the founders of these new prenup apps, some companies like Hello Prenup, Neptune First, the founders are women. The founder of First, she actually was Sheryl Sandberg's former chief of staff at Facebook, now Meta. And so there's certainly a bit of a lean in kind of, you know, kind of attitude, you know, around prenups. Like, you know, I think in Sheryl Sandberg was telling women, you've got to negotiate your salary. And I think now her, you know, her protege is saying, well, why don't you negotiate your marriage?
Yeah. Mm. And what are some of the reasons why you've seen more and more women sort of lean into this for their own protection?
I think there's more awareness around what's called the motherhood penalty. And that's that refers to women's lost earning potential if they stay at home to raise small children. 80% of stay at home parents are mothers. So Hello Prenup has an optional clause. It's called an equalization clause. And you can assign, you know, a dollar amount per year that one partner stays home with the children. Like if you stay home for 1 year, I'll give you, I don't know, an additional $30,000. Or you can assign a greater share of the marital assets, like from 50% to maybe 70%. So there's, I think, just a more awareness about how, you know, women have been getting kind of the short end of the stick when it comes to divorce.
Mm-hmm. We'd love to hear from you this hour. How have you navigated money in your romantic relationships? What's worked and what hasn't? Yeah. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. David on YouTube, little jab here, I think. Says, Gen Z doesn't want to split the check on the first date, but they will split assets in advance. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, David. So I guess, Laura, I wanted to ask more generally about money and relationships, because I feel like there's two competing thoughts in my mind. One is that money drives separation in relationships. The other is that when money becomes an issue in relationships, it's really just reflective of something deeper. Do you see it play out both ways with couples, or do you think there's more truth to one or the other?
Yeah, great question. So we know from the research that it's not actually differences in income that drive separation, that it is an aspect of one of the predictors of divorce, not necessarily because of differences in money, but in differences in how people talk about money. And if there is contempt that is introduced into that conversation, contempt about how somebody views it, how they value it, what meaning it has to them, that's where it is a tremendous risk.
Can you give an example of how those differences could cause a problem?
Right. Yeah. Great idea. So in one situation, you might have somebody who grew up in an environment where they were raised, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And so for them, they might really value generosity. They might value, they don't want to spend a lot of money on material items. And they might be married to somebody who has a sense of like money equals success, that equals freedom. As a result of all my hard work, I'm able to afford some of these items. Now, if each partner can understand and value why the person has so many strong feelings about money, then they're able to find compromise better. But if they go in like, this is right, this is wrong, this is what money means, it's never really about the dollars. It's about the meaning that we assign to the dollars that causes the conflict.
Interesting.
Melinda, go ahead. Jump in, Jennifer.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to give like another example. So the company Neptune, they have a game. It's called Fight Night. And it's to help couples have some of these conversations before they figure out what they want in the prenup. And one of the questions is, let's say you're going out to dinner and everyone is drinking alcohol except maybe your partner. Your partner's just not drinking that night. Do you think that you should all split the check evenly, or do you think that the person who didn't drink should pay less and contribute less? And that's just a kind of one example of what feels like a very tiny thing, but you can actually understand like how there would be lots of values attached to kind of one choice or the other.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think it's, I mean, there, it's so hard, I feel like, to talk about money and to really get into the nitty gritty. How do, in your mind, Laura, how does even bringing up the issue of a prenup sort of open the door to sort of get to some of the heart of what Jennifer was just talking about? Because a simple question about who should pay for the alcohol at an outing, it signals a lot.
100%. I agree. I mean, I'm a couples therapist. People come in and they'll talk to me about their deepest, darkest secrets, right? I know about their sex lives. I know everything. But then we start talking about money. The whole tone of the room gets really quiet.
Really?
People don't like to mention numbers. They just, they'll start speaking really vaguely about numbers or what something costs.
Why do you think that is? When they give you so much trust otherwise.
Right, right. And I remind them, guys, this is confidential. It's just me, right? And I think that it has to do with shame. It has to do with shame of affluence. Do you perceive me as being greedy? Do you perceive me as being, you know, somebody who is selfish? Mm. Or on the other hand, there's shame around, oh, am I a good enough provider? You know, how much worth do I contribute to the marriage, to the relationship, to the world? Like, so much is encapsulated into it.
That's so interesting. And Jennifer, I wanted to, because at the opening of your article, this couple that you profile, they are very casually talking about prenups. I mean, it's like they're talking about Netflix shows or Apple Plus TV shows, and they throw in, oh, prenup. Yeah, let's do it. Who's going to own the IP? Blah, 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 blah. Did the couples, the young couples you talked to, did their energy shift? Because Laura's seeing people clam up. Have you seen a generational shift in how people even broach the subject of money? Is it more open, maybe because they don't have any yet? I don't know.
I mean, it's so funny because, yes, on one hand, they would be quite open talking about things like that, which to me feel a little bit maybe more theoretical. But when you started getting into the nitty gritty, okay, if you get pregnant, are you going to stay home? And then like questions, like with some of the couples I've talked to, they're like, I don't think so. And I'm like, okay, but what if for some reason you do, how are you going to, and it's so weird. These are like the most personal questions, but it was my job as a journalist to ask them. And people would start to get a little clammy. And I think that some of these prenups, there is still ambiguity in them because they can't, I mean, they're not crystal balls, they're rough outlines.
Melinda on Facebook says, I find it's best to have an open and honest conversation, but a lot of people are not so honest about their money, kind of reflecting what we've been talking about. Melissa on Facebook, this is an interesting proposal. Marriage licenses should expire and need renewal like anything else. If both parties don't sign, it's null and void. Well,
no,
that would be
a divorce.
That would be a very, very different world. Interesting idea. I do wonder how much of this just comes back to changing gender dynamics, Jennifer, and if you saw that reflected in your reporting at all. I mean, I'll note that among workers aged 25 to 34, women make about 95% of what men do. That's a shrinking wage gap. There's still a gap there, but among younger workers, it's a smaller gap. I'm curious, how does that contribute, if at all, to this conversation we're having?
I think where you start to see a really big difference is when children are introduced into the situation. And a lot of the women I talked to were very scared of, you know, potentially taking 5-10 years off from their career and then having to re-enter the workforce. You don't start again right where you left off. In many ways, you would even go further back. And, you know, that's actually one of the, you know, the criticisms I have of these prenups, particularly ones that are trying to sort of make up for gender inequality, is that it's kind of this private contract, or kind of giving up on maybe like solving this at a larger, more societal level. I mean, maybe we should try to solve the motherhood penalty, you know, together structurally, rather than trying to come up with some sort of percentage that you as a couple can figure out to make up for this broad injustice.
Yeah. And Laura, I wonder what you hear from couples, you know, because a lot of times a lot of times it is the woman who has to take the step back when child rearing happens. What do you hear from? But men work, right? And they're bringing home money in those situations. So what do you hear from couples about that dynamic? And does it sort of cause rub because both are making contributions, although the contributions are different?
Absolutely. And fairness is really what it all comes down to, is who's working harder? What's harder? Is it harder to be home with the kids? Is it harder to work? What about you work all day and then you come home and try to help out? And having those conversations where each person is really trying to understand what the other person's life is like is what helps in that situation.
Yeah, making sure your partner feels seen and their work and their contributions feel seen. I wanted to talk about debt a little bit because, Jennifer, you mentioned that this was something that those prenups sort of dealt with because you have couples, millennials, X, you have folks in the Gen Z, you know, group as well, entering marriage with student loans, credit card debts, all kinds of surprise liabilities. What were some of the issues that you were seeing about protecting yourself from debt and debt that could pop up in the marriage as well?
One of the craziest things I found out, I spoke to a law professor in Louisiana, which is a community property state. And it's also really important to remember these laws are, divorce laws are differ state by state. But she told me that if you, say while you're married, let's say you paid off, somehow you managed to pay off $100,000 in student loans while you were married. And let's say you paid them off like with a private account that you had. You were like, babe, these are mine. I'm just going to take care of it. The law doesn't see it that way. The law doesn't see that you just sort of paid those off. They'll sort of say, no, but that money that you made, that came from when you were married. That's part of the general marital pool. So the law basically says that you as a couple paid off that $100,000 and that you might have to reimburse your spouse now for $50,000. And you know, she told me, she's like, I always teach that around Halloween. It's something scary. A lot of younger couples, they think that if you keep things separate in accounts, or if you take out like a car loan, but it's only in your name, they think that that's just their debt. But you know, what I learned, for instance, in New York State, if your spouse takes out a car loan in their name, if you benefited from that debt, like, so maybe you just drove it a few times to run errands, like you benefited from that debt. So it's now shared debt. Mm. And a lot of people don't know that.
Wow. Wow.
We'd love to hear from you this hour. How have you navigated money in your romantic relationships? What's worked? What hasn't? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. I think, Laura, I am curious if you feel like this is something that kind of pops up out of the blue for people, sort of conflicts about money, or is it something that if you notice sort of simmers for a while and then sort of comes up as people are getting into that therapy process?
That's an excellent question. I think that's one of these exciting things that comes from the fact that people are talking about prenups in advance, because I think it's always better to talk about things in advance, because otherwise it's going to pop out sideways. But definitely, I would say that as couples are noticing conflicts, and they're usually about, again, what's fair and what's not fair and who's working harder, that's when the money creeps in. Mm. And it's a way to try to concretize something that is a difference of opinion that might feel abstract. So people will pull in numbers and kind of weaponize the numbers as a way to kind of win an argument.
Right.
Whereas if you're talking about values, you know, neither person is right nor wrong.
Yeah.
So how
can you say I'm not doing my fair share? I make X.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I pay for this and I pay for that. Right. And you don't do this and you don't do that.
You guys know. Yeah. And I wanted to go back. One of the listeners was talking about people not being honest.
Yeah.
And this idea of secrecy with money. Ooh. That's the most dangerous thing when it comes to relationships.
And let's put a pin in that and talk about that on the other side of the break. By the way, how have you navigated money in your romantic relationships? What's worked and what hasn't? Call us 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be talking about secrets and finances after this.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This hour, we're talking about money and the role it plays in romantic relationships. With us are Jennifer Wilson, staff writer at The New Yorker, who recently published a piece titled Why Millennials Love Prenups. We also have Laura Silverstein, couples therapist and co-owner of Mainline Counseling Partners.
We also have you. Our question this hour, how have you navigated money in your romantic relationships? Did you get a prenup? If you're married or divorced, do you wish you had? Call 888-477-9499, email studio2@whyy.org, YouTube or Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat and let's bring in John from Bethlehem on the line. Hey, John, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for taking the call. It's more of a comment. My daughter is a high-powered professional and earns quite a bit of money in her salary. She married a very nice young man who makes probably one-tenth of what she makes. He also comes from a modest family. Her family, my wife and myself, are quite wealthy and trying to set up their they had to navigate trying to set up a prenup. And we had my wife and I had to try to navigate setting up her inheritance, trying to figure out, do we do this through trusts, to just straight inheritance? It was quite difficult. And I'd like to know your experts' comments on the or thoughts on this type of situation.
Yeah, that's a great call. And it brings in the dynamic here, Laura, of the other generation.
Yeah.
Right. So we're talking about money here. And we're talking about money between a couple. But there's also looming all over this, the family money. Does family money come up a lot in couples therapy? Yes, it does.
I mean, that's the only time that I've had prenups be brought into to my work is usually because there are feelings in the generation above about inheritance and money. So I just think it's really, really good to be having these conversations preventatively and be able to talk about, you know, the issues with your daughter. And I love that you are, you know, thinking about these things in advance. And I'd love to hear Jennifer's thoughts as well.
Yeah. Jennifer, do you want to weigh in on this? How often does the older generation coming in and speaking on this issue, how does that influence the outcome?
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. So the piece is about millennials and Gen Z and why they want prenups. But it's true. In a lot of cases, it's parents who are pushing for them. One of the lawyers I interviewed, she told me that sometimes she just says to the person, her client, just put your mother on the phone. I know that that's who this is coming from. But we're in the middle of what's called the Great Wealth Transfer. Baby boomers are in the process of transferring, some estimates put it at $100 trillion in wealth to their children and grandchildren. And that's actually why, I mean, Hello Prenup was a Shark Tank company. And in the, if you watch the episode, the sharks were not that into it. And then the founder was, she said, I think at the time the estimate was $65 trillion. They heard $65 trillion, great wealth transfer, prenups can protect that money. And boom, she had she had the sharks smelling blood.
I saw this video, this viral video on Instagram where a guy said that, you know, he had a lot of money in his family and he was the boogeyman, the dad. He said he told his kids that you will not inherit anything if you do not sign a prenup. Mm-hmm. And so it made it a lot easier for the children to convince their spouses to to sign, because you don't want to block your spouse from inheriting. So he said he was fine being the boogeyman. I want to bring in another caller. We have Barbara from Princeton on the line. Barbara, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey there. I wonder how often you encounter the question, how did your parents manage their money? Mm. I was married to a guy whose father was a contractor, and it was either feast or famine, and he did not want to make out a budget. So the second question is, are you willing to make out a budget where in a budget you can actually have some extra money plans that you can spend it versus, oh, we don't ever have any money?
Yeah. Hmm. Good questions from Barbara from Princeton. Laura, I'll throw that to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I'm helping couples talk about money, a lot of times I'll have them ask each other, what did you grow up with in terms of norms about money?
Yeah.
And what did you notice with your parents? What did you notice worked? What did you notice didn't work? So that each one of them is bringing that experience and integrating it so that they as a new couple can also take what they want from their parents, but also integrate what their partner wants to have a really much more sophisticated understanding of how they want to do that budget. And yes, budgets come up a lot of times in my office, and a lot of people are having differences of opinion. Some people say, yeah, it's important, but I really don't want to look at the numbers. And other people are saying, we have to look at the numbers. And so sometimes couples can get polarized about that. Mm. And so then we have to kind of take the bird's eye view and help them.
Yeah.
Before the break, Laura, we were talking about money, but then also instances where people don't talk about money,
right,
or they shield things about money. So how does that come up? I mean, do you find are there big reveals about money that come up through therapy? And then how do people work through that? That seems like that could be really destabilizing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a betrayal. And so I work with people who have hidden major financial information from their partner the same way that I would help them navigate an affair. And also, I saw a statistic that financial secrecy is actually more predictive of relationship distress than differences in than debt and or in financial insecurity. So it's the secrecy that's problematic.
Yeah. I want to read a couple comments. Mary on YouTube says, in our 53-year marriage, I pay the bills from both incomes and we both have our own money. Mm-hmm. Big costs like home improvements, we both make decisions. David on YouTube says, I wonder if longer life expectancy could be behind the growing trend of prenups. With a longer timeline, the stakes around finances, careers, and retirement assets become more complex. Jennifer, I wanted to ask you about postnups because, you know, couples, they're already married, maybe some circumstances change, and you want to, you know, sign a postnup. What are your findings around that and the leverage? I mean, I wonder how people could even convince your spouse. You're like, I got you. You got me.
Yeah.
No. How will we do
it? That's why, I mean, I see some TikTok influencers talking about postnups, saying, you know, every year, you know, tweak your prenup, get a postnup. And it's really, I think, bad advice because, you know, at that point, what if they say no? It's not like a prenup where you can sort of discover that your fiance has all these crazy ideas about money that you just are not on the same page about, and you can leave. But if you're already married, the postnup is, I mean, you basically just sort of have to hope that your partner agrees. And at that point, I wonder, well, if that's the case, you know, you could, if you're that confident that your spouse could agree to terms, then you probably could figure out your own divorce settlement together. Postnups are also less likely to be enforced. Mm. That could change. There was a time when it was really hard to enforce prenups, mm-hmm. but make sure. So don't sort of, you know, rush and put together a little prenup thinking, whatever, we can always revise it later for the postnup. I think that's the big risk. And one thing about secrecy, if I can just say, that's actually an argument in favor of prenups, because one of the things that can invalidate it is if there was insufficient financial disclosure. So I know lots of couples who had no idea that such and such had that much money in student loan debt. They sort of vaguely knew they had a lot of loans and then found out, oh my God.
Quarter of a million.
If you get a prenup, that's not the case. You have to do full financial disclosure or else it's invalidated.
Okay, so I get the argument for discussing your finances openly, prenups, et cetera. But a lot of us believe and are told that you marry for love, and that is sort of the primary driver of your relationship. And I think where a lot of folks get hung up is when we start to have this conversation and someone say, my partner brings to me, let's talk about a prenup, let's talk about our finances, let's get that in order. What I might hear
is you don't really love me.
Yeah.
And you're planning for a life without me.
Yeah.
And that this relationship is more financial and transactional than based in something deeper.
Exactly.
So how would you get past that as the couple, the partner receiving that information?
Right. That the core sense of relationship stability is about trust and commitment.
Yep.
Those are the two pillars that keep everything up and in.
And so here you want to talk about this other thing.
Yeah.
About the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you want to talk about the money.
What's that?
And you want to talk about the money, not just the end. You want to talk about the money, which makes this feel like we're in like a business partnership, less than a relationship.
Right. Which can cause us, and we all have a sense of fear of abandonment. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's even more exacerbated when you're thinking about going up in front of friends and family and committing your life to somebody thinking this is for good or better or worse. We're going to do this. And it can be incredibly hurtful for somebody to bring that up, in which case, again, it's about a deeper conversation of understanding, why are you bringing this up? Where is it coming from? A fear? Is it coming from, you know, a way to just have a safety clause, a safety net, kind of like, you know, a will? Like, nobody wants to talk about dying, right? But you still want to have your ideas on paper of what you want your partner to say in the hospital room if you're, you know, there.
Yeah.
We actually had someone on the line, Jamie from Monco, who has a question. Jamie, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Thanks for having me. I was hoping the experts could talk a little bit more about the risks of the postnup versus the prenup and why it wouldn't be enforceable. My partner and I have been together for 8 years, and the prospects of wedding planning are super daunting and time-consuming and logistically huge. So it's sort of one of those things where we're like, oh, we'd love to shelf it and address it afterwards.
That's a good question. Okay, so Jennifer, you mentioned this idea that maybe a postnup will be less enforceable. Now, Jamie's got a lot going on and doesn't want to go through the prenup process right now. They want to get to it. It might just have to wait until after the wedding day. Legally, what risks might that expose the couple to?
I am not a lawyer. I just want to say that I think that's why these apps are so popular. And that's actually one of their selling points, is that you can do this in an hour or two. You know, I made a fake prenup for research purposes to plan my fake wedding to Harry Styles.
Ooh, and Harry.
Congratulations.
Only fake for the moment. It could still happen.
And it doesn't take long at all. That's really been their selling point. I just listen, the law is constantly changing. There are postnups that have been upheld, but I mean, just from what I've heard from lawyers, it can be trickier. And in terms of like the question of romance, one thing I wanted to say, you know, I interviewed a lawyer who wrote this book called The Generous Prenup, and she reminded me that the prenup can also be a place to actually, you know, provide for your partner maybe more than they would be according to the law. You know, you could earmark more spousal support than the law would require. You can give a very generous equalization clause. You know, you can say, I'm going to give you this much more if you stay home and raise the children. It can actually be a way, because, you know, I think people imagine that, I think people think that alimony is way more common than it is. A lot of judges don't like to give it out. And I think the era of lifelong alimony is over pretty much. So the prenup can actually be a safety blanket depending on how you write it.
So it can give security to your spouse. I wanted to ask you, we only have a couple minutes left, Laura, but I know you had some do's and don'ts when it comes to money, when it comes to this topic of prenups and postnups.
Yep.
I want to give you a chance to lay those out.
I would say do postpone persuasion, right? So if you're talking about money, you want to make sure that you try to understand where your partner's coming from first before you try to problem solve. Number two is make sure that you are scheduling your budgeting conversations. The third do is speak about money with tenderness, because it's so delicate for many of us. In terms of don'ts, don't weaponize the numbers, don't shame or judge. And don't talk about money when you're stressed or sleep deprived.
Because you might say something you can't take back.
Any topic.
Yes,
I'll add one more do. Do thank your guests for coming on the show and doing a wonderful job. Let me thank you so much, Laura Silverstein, couples therapist and co-owner of Mainline Counseling Partners. Laura, thank you so much for your time today on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And to West Philadelphia's Jennifer Wilson, thank you so much. Staff writer at The New Yorker, who recently published a piece titled Why Millennials Love Prenups. Jennifer, thanks for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
And now it is time to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song selection. Al, hit it.
I wish I was single again. I wish I was single again, yeah, I do. For when I was single, my money would jingle. And I wish I was single again.
That gave us a chuckle. That was nice. That's I Wish I Was Single Again by the great Doc Watson in a live recording from 1963. Now, this is interesting. The legendary folk singer and guitar player married at age 24 in 1947 and stayed with his beloved Rosalie until they both died 6 months apart more than 60 years later. So I guess he's writing from a different point of view there.
Yeah, he did not want to be single again, by the way. And thank you to our listener, Bernie B, for choosing that song and for being our Studio 2 DJ of the Day. And thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel May Bryan. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And we should say, I think on behalf of both of us, this song does not speak for either of us.
No, I love my husband. I like being married. Thank you very much. I
love my wife. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you again next week.
She beat me, she banged me, oh then. She beat me, she banged me, and she swore that she'd hang me. Lord, I wish I was single again. I couldn't suit that woman to save my life. She went for that rope, oh then. She went for that rope, oh then. She went for that rope, my poor neck to choke. Lord, I wish I was single again. But the rope, it did break, oh then. The rope, it did break.